It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is back up to 27 degrees, fair skies, light winds, west from the 5 miles per hour at the airport, 10 miles of visibility out there, and the Weather Service is calling for sunny skies today, partly cloudy tonight, mostly sunny tomorrow. High near 37 today with those westerly winds becoming completely calm this afternoon. Overnight low of about 27 tonight with calm winds. Coming up on the Midday Report, a Kodiak man was arrested on Tuesday with $543,000 worth of illicit drugs. A new exhibit at the Kodiak History Museum explores the meaning of Alaska Native identity. And a halibut fisherman near Sitka has discovered a mud volcano. We'll find out what that is after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. President Biden signed a bill that would force a tentative railroad labor agreement and avert a national strike. As NPR's Franco Ordonez reports, Biden says the economic consequences of a strike were too great.
President Biden said he was reluctant to intervene in the talks that stalled between the railroads and four unions that rejected the agreement, but said the impacts would have been catastrophic.
As many as 765,000 Americans, many of them union members themselves, would have been put out of work for the first time, and within the first 2 weeks of the strike alone.
The Biden administration brokered the agreement that includes a 24% pay raise over 5 years and an extra paid day off. 8 of the 12 rail unions ratified it, but 4 voted it down while calling for paid sick leave. Biden said he'd continue the fight for paid sick leave. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
The economy added 263,000 jobs in November, above expectations, and that's raising worries a booming economy could keep inflation high. Jag Khalil of member station VPM has more.
Richmond Federal Reserve Bank President Tom Barkin said he was thinking about the long-term structure of the labor market and policies that could address labor shortages.
So labor supply looks like it'll remain constrained. And the Fed's efforts to bring demand back into balance won't be easy.
The Federal Reserve is trying to lower inflation by raising interest rates. Barkin mentioned economic policies as one way to address longer-term labor concerns.
Increasingly, I worry that we're moving to an environment where labor is short, not long. The situation can be managed. Other countries have proven that. But it requires real intentionality.
Barkin said his views were his alone and not of the Federal Reserve. For NPR News, I'm Jad Khalil in Richmond.
In New York, closing arguments have finished in the tax fraud trial of former President Donald Trump's business. NPR's Ilya Meretz reports, after more than a month of hearing witnesses and reviewing documents, the jury is set to begin deliberations.
In their final presentation to the jury, defense lawyers said the fraud at the company was the work of a rogue employee acting on his own behalf without the knowledge of the Trumps. The company's longtime chief financial officer has already pleaded guilty to tax crimes. Prosecutors countered that there was a culture of fraud and deception, which also benefited the Trump business's bottom line. They say Donald Trump literally put his signature on a number of documents that were the basis for top executives cheating on their personal taxes. Before court adjourned, defense lawyers moved for a mistrial. The judge denied it. On Monday, the jury will receive its instructions and begin deliberations. Ilya Meretz, NPR News, New York.
Preliminary closing numbers on Wall Street, the Dow up 34 points, the Nasdaq down 20, S&P 500 down 4. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT Kodiak, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak man was arrested on Tuesday on drug charges after members of the Alaska State Troopers Statewide Drug Enforcement Unit intercepted a package containing methamphetamine, cocaine, and fentanyl. According to Troopers Dispatch, 30-year-old Kalani Coyle was charged with multiple counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance. Coyle was known to investigators for drug trafficking on the island, according to Troopers. The parcel was allegedly intended for Coyle and contained 912 grams of methamphetamine, 56 grams of cocaine, and 5,550 fentanyl pills. The street value of the drugs was $543,000. It's the latest drug bust in Kodiak. Earlier this fall, law enforcement seized more than 10,000 fentanyl pills in a bust that also turned up heroin, meth, and multiple handguns. The street value of that seizure was also more than $500,000. Coyle is scheduled for a preliminary court appearance in Kodiak later this month. A new exhibit at the Kodiak History Museum explores the meaning of Alaska Native identity. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, it's the museum's first exhibition curated through a public call for proposals.
Visions of Native Identity is the newest exhibit at the Kodiak History Museum and the first to be chosen based on ideas from the public. The exhibition doesn't take up a big space at the museum, but it asks two big questions: who is Native and who decides? Sarah Harrington is the museum's executive director.
The museum is making a decisive shift to identify the issues that are important to the community, rather than the things that we see as museum professionals as historically significant.
It's the latest shift the museum has undergone over the last few years aimed at inclusivity. Kodiak residents also helped develop the new exhibit. Colorful panels guide visitors through the cultural, legal, and historical definitions that have defined what it means to be Native over the years. That includes addressing discriminatory laws aimed at Alaska Native people that have also affected identity, and photos submitted by members of the community that celebrate family traditions and how Native culture has shaped Kodiak. A cup of markers sits next to a paper easel at the back of the room with a question scrawled across the top asking visitors, "What does being Native mean to you?" Kodiak History Museum curator Lynn Walker says gathering public feedback is just as important as the display itself, and museum staff hope it will spark more conversations.
And so over time, this will fill up with people's responses, and so we can kind of really engage our community in this kind of discussion.
Harrington says including the public is part of a nationwide trend as more museums reevaluate how they preserve and present history to their audiences.
We're starting to have brave, honest conversations about what role does the museum play in facilitating conversations for every part of the community, no matter how they see it or how they identify, but everybody's story belongs here and we will make space for it.
Visions of Native Identity is on display at the Kodiak History Museum until May. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The Environmental Protection Agency is one step away from action that would protect the Bristol Bay watershed and crush the dreams of those who want to see a mine developed over the massive pebble deposit in southwest Alaska. EPA Region 10 Administrator Casey Sixkiller announced on Thursday that he is recommending that the agency impose restrictions that amount to a veto of the proposed mine. Sixkiller said the action, if approved by EPA headquarters, would support commercial and recreational salmon fishing, as well as subsistence harvests that, quote, have sustained Alaska Native communities for thousands of years, close quote. The announcement is the latest in a long string of setbacks for the Canadian-owned company that wants to mine gold and copper from the Pebble deposit. Pebble Partnership Chief Executive John Shively calls it a massive federal overreach that goes beyond what the Clean Water Act allows, but it's a move toward the lasting protection mine opponents are asking for. United Tribes of Bristol Bay Executive Director Alana Hurley said in an emailed statement that the threat of the mine has hung over the region for 20 years. She urged the Biden administration to act quickly. Sixkiller's move now puts the matter in the hands of Radhika Fox, the Assistant EPA Administrator for Water. Fox could impose a veto, make changes to it, or reject it entirely. She has 60 days to consider it. A couple of Sitka residents who were fishing for halibut last month noticed an unusual feature on their depth sounder as they set gear a few miles north of town. 200 feet below the surface of the water, the sounder slowly painted the picture of what appeared to be a volcano, a perfectly formed cone about 100 feet tall with a plume of gas trailing from the top. Experts who've seen the image say it's no cause for alarm. It's most likely a mud volcano, and it's also not the only one near Sitka. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
Locals don't use rods and reels much to fish for halibut in Sitka. Rather, most set a subsistence skate, a long line baited with a dozen or more hooks that is laid right along the bottom from a slowly moving boat. Jason Schmidt was doing just this in November near the entrance to Nakwasina Sound, 5 miles north of Sitka. Schmidt was on deck, paying out the line.
And then my friend who I was out fishing with was inside watching the depths on the sonar, and he noticed just a weird shape and called me in to look at it with him.
And what was it?
Well, I didn't know what it was when I first saw it, but it certainly looked like some things I had seen before. I think we both immediately saw the cone shape and the kind of trail coming out of it, thinking that it could be an underwater volcano of sort.
Had it been anyone else, this might have been an invitation to head for the hills. But Schmidt is the regional geoscience coordinator for the Tlingit and Haida Central Council. She'd been in Sitka for what has been a very interesting year geologically for the region. Her first impulse was to try and find the feature again and then get on the phone.
I'm aware of kind of the geologic context of Sitka and the surrounding islands, like, and spatially where the Queen Charlotte Fault is and where the Manajkum volcanic field is. And this location, we're all kind of just like not adding up with the story that I know about our geology here. And so, yeah, I just called the people who I knew had spent a lot of time thinking about the seafloor here.
It's a classic example of what we have seen out on the fault down around Dixon entrance.
Dr. Gary Green is a marine geologist, emeritus professor at the Moss Landing Marine Lab, and a leading expert on the undersea geology of the Queen Charlotte Fault.
These types of plumes that come out of this volcanic-like cone are associated with what we call mud volcanoes. And they're not really active volcanoes where magma comes flowing out, but it's mainly fluids that come up from depth and carry with it sulfide-rich gases and what have you.
Green has done sonar studies of the Queen Charlotte Fault that have produced images that are surprisingly similar to what Schmidt and her fishing partner saw on their depth sounder. The term mud volcano tends to conjure up thoughts of destruction, but with a few exceptions, their only similarity to terrestrial volcanoes, like the nearby Mount Edgecombe, is their shape.
If there's a better term, I'd love to use it, and right now I don't know about one.
Dr. Cheryl Cameron is a state geologist at the Alaska Volcano Observatory, and another expert Jason Schmidt consulted. Cameron is from Sitka and is familiar with the depth sounders people use here while fishing. She hesitates to draw any conclusions from the image Schmidt captured, but admits that there are plenty of possibilities.
A fish finder is looking for reflections within the water column, and so anything that has a density or a sound speed different from that of the rest of the water will cause a reflection. And so that, you know, reflector could be indicating a change in temperature or composition. It could be any kind of gas leaking out of the ground that would generate a plume with a different impedance and thus a reflection. So it could be CO2, it could be methane, it could be fluid with particulates in it. There are a lot of possible causes that are not related to volcanism.
Nakwasina, where Schmidt was fishing, is not within the Mount Edgecombe volcanic field, but it's right next door. Edgecombe generated headlines last spring when an earthquake swarm signaled that magma was stirring beneath the long dormant crater. Subsequent radar studies showed that the flanks of the mountain had inflated by several inches over the last couple of years. Although the mud volcano is probably not volcanic, Gary Green says there's not enough information to rule out that it might be related to what's happening beneath Mount Edgecombe.
It could very well be associated with that magma that's moving up into the cone. It could be that the heat from that magma has started a convection of warm water, hot waters that are now venting at that locality.
The mud volcano is near a place called the Beehive. Everyone who's been to Sitka on the ferry passes just a stone's throw away. Jason Schmidt didn't catch any halibut on the cone, but that unhappy fact hasn't kept her away.
Well, we keep going back again. My friend whose boat I was on has gone back to the same place to check again and again, and it's still a bump under the water. I still have so many questions and would like to go back with better instrumentation where you could really see, but I'll leave that to Gary and Cheryl to direct.
Although Schmidt is a professional scientist, accidentally discovering an underwater mud volcano is a form of citizen science that is very useful to researchers. Cheryl Cameron welcomes any and all observations of geologic phenomenon at the Alaska Volcano Observatory. Gary Green is going a step further and is looking for research funding to go down and take a look at the mud volcano, or at least take its temperature. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A member of a national committee that looked at PFAS health effects shared information about the project during an Alaska Collaborative on Health and the Environment webinar on Wednesday. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Dr. Laura Anderko co-authored a recent National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine Special Committee PFAS report. Dr. Anderko said the committee reviewed scientific literature and data on human health effects linked to PFAS exposure and categorized them based on how strong the connection is, starting with those where there's sufficient evidence not based on chance or bias. They include decreased antibody response and several others.
Dyslipidemia or high cholesterol, adults and children both, decreased infant and fetal growth, and an increased risk of kidney cancer in adults.
The second category group, PFAS health effects for which there is limited or suggestive evidence, that list includes liver enzyme alterations and increased risks for thyroid disease and dysfunction, ulcerative colitis, testicular cancer, and pregnancy-induced hypertension. Anderko said the review also yielded a new connection.
An increased risk of breast cancer in adults, which had not been documented up to this point.
Dr. Anderko said the committee used all the PFAS health effect information to develop clinical recommendations, including blood testing for the chemicals.
People who are highly exposed should be encouraged to get a blood test.
Anderko said the committee noted that there are a limited number of laboratories in the country which screen blood samples for PFAS and also emphasized their relatively high cost and test access inequities. PFAS is widely used in consumer and industrial products, and PFAS-containing firefighting foams have contaminated groundwater at numerous locations in Alaska. Anderko said the EPA released a more stringent interim drinking water health advisory level for some PFAS chemicals this past summer.
It's gone from 70 parts per trillion all the way to 0.004. That's incredibly huge difference.
Anderko noted that there is federal money available to help communities with PFAS-contaminated water. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Read diverse, read indie. On Insight Daily Radio, conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. The Lonely Assassin is the latest installment in the Milan thriller book series, by master storyteller Jack Erickson. In the novel, a Russian banker embezzles millions, laundering money in Switzerland for Russian oligarchs, and then flees with his Italian wife to a remote location on Italy's Lake Como. Vladimir Putin orders an assassin to Milan to take out the banker, but unexpectedly, the assassin meets an intriguing Italian woman in Milan who probes into his emotional life. On a dangerous assignment, the assassin realizes he's in a deep personal crisis. We spoke with him about this latest exciting novel.
It's interesting that in my first book, it takes place in 2011. The second book takes place in 2013. That's No One Sleeps. The third book, Vesuvius Nights, takes place in 2015 when there's a Milan Expo going on. And The Lonely Assassin takes place in 2017. So with this odd year for each book, I thought, okay, what happened in 2019? So the book starts in December of 2019 when one of the agents for Digos goes to Bergamo, where I've been, to visit her father for his 70th birthday. And he's just come back from China, where he has signed a new business agreement. And there's a couple Chinese businessmen there from Wuhan. So the title of this book is called Year of the Plague.
That's author Jack Erickson on his latest novel, The Lonely Assassin, which is available online at bookstores and at Red Brick Press. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the second day of December, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:30. It will set again at 4:27. That will give us 6 hours and 57 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 43 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 47 degrees, set in 2004 and in 2018, and our record low was 5 degrees, set in 1988. Taking a look at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 4:01 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 2-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 9:53 p.m. of 6.6 feet. On the west side, your low tide will happen at 4:40 p.m. and be 2.9 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:26 p.m. of 10.8 feet. Currently 27 degrees under fair skies in Kodiak. It is a beautiful day, if a little crisp, but not much wind. West winds to 5 miles per hour at the airport right now with 10 miles of visibility. Sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 37, northwest winds to 5, becoming completely calm. For tonight, partly cloudy, low of 27, more calm winds. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny, high near 38, calm winds turning to the southwest, coming up to about 5 in the afternoon. For Saturday night, partly cloudy skies, low of 35, south winds to 10, and rain is likely for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and just a chance of rain on Wednesday. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Southwest 15 today, seas to 5 feet. For tonight, southwest 20, seas to 6 feet. And that's the forecast for tomorrow as well. Southwest 20, seas to 6 feet, coming up to 7 feet on Saturday night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight and Saturday. Southwest 15 knots this afternoon, seas building to 4 feet in the afternoon. For tonight, southwest 25, seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 25, seas to 6 feet. Well, it's going on very soon. The Kiwanis tree sales are going on the weekends, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So today it will open at 4 p.m. and go to 7 p.m. Tomorrow it's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Sundays it's 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. And that all goes on at 111 Bartell Avenue on the cutoff road between Razanoff and Mill Bay. They have 3 varieties of trees, as well as wreaths, mantelpieces, cedar garland by the foot, and it's expected to end by December 11th, so get in there and get your tree now. Again, that's open at 4 p.m. today through 7 p.m., 10 a.m. tomorrow to 4 p.m. The City Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Tuesday, December 6th. That's happening at 12 p.m. in Fisherman's Hall. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website, and the meeting will also be web-streamed from that same site. For more information, call the City Harbor Department at 907-486-8080. Also coming up December 6th is the Women's Bay Service Area meeting. That's happening at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. And that's starting at 5:30 p.m. Again, Women's Bay Service Area Board meeting at the Women's Bay Fire Hall, December 6th, 5:30 p.m. On December 8th, they will not be having an assembly work session. That has been canceled. Join your friends and neighbors to watch the Kodiak fleet light up with holiday lights. That's going to happen Saturday, December 17th this year. The holiday lights parade through the Near Island Channel with all the boats. Sure was great last year. Should high winds cause the parade to be canceled, the decorated boats will still be available for viewing in their stalls, both in St. Paul Harbor and St. Herman Harbor on Near Island. For more information about the boat parade, contact the Kodiak Maritime Museum at 907-486-0384, or you can also email them at info@kodiakmaritimemuseum.org. Kodiak Audubon's annual membership meeting and winter birds presentation is Friday, December 9th. That's a week from today. Bill Pyle will review the details of the Christmas bird count, and Robin Corcoran will present a slideshow with identification tips on the winter birds of Kodiak. The event will be held in Kodiak College in rooms 128 through 130 of the Benny Benson Building. Join them at 6:30 p.m. to renew your membership, enjoy a slice of pizza, and sign up for this year's Christmas bird count. The talk will begin at 7. It's a wonderful opportunity to sharpen your skills for the 2022 count. This year's count will be held in town Sunday, December 18th, and at Narrow Cape on Saturday, December 31st. But again, their membership meeting is next Friday. That starts at 6:30 p.m., and it's going on in the Benny Benson Building at Kodiak College. The miniature quilt show and bake sale is happening at the St. James the Fisherman's Church. It's its annual sale. It happens December 10th this year, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Enter your miniature quilts for a show or sale. They should be close to 20 by 20 inches or smaller. There will be a prize for best in show, and you get 5 miniature quilts per entry fee, which is $10. To enter your quilt, get a hold of them at, call Ellen Lester at 942-3868. Entry forms can be emailed to you for your convenience. And that's all happening December 9th, the actual. Oh, they need to be in by December 9th for the miniature quilts and bake sale on December 10th. Also on December 10th, the Chiniac Christmas Market, it was postponed. It was supposed to go on tomorrow, but they have decided to put it off for a week. It'll be going on Saturday, December 10th. It's noon to 4 p.m. at the Chiniac Library. Take a right at King Crab Way, mile 41 and a quarter. The road will curve to the right, and the library is located on the left-hand side of the road.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Kodiak, and welcome to the December 2nd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Mother Nature sure has a way of demonstrating she has the upper hand, doesn't she? I don't think most of us were planning on a foot of snow on Monday, but here we are. You have to admit, it was and is beautiful. I predict lots of skiing, sledding, and maybe even a game of King or Queen of the Hill happening in the coming week. There's nothing quite like a moonlit, snow-covered landscape. Good for photographing night skies and walks on the beach during the minus tides coming up later in the week. The waxing moon and Jupiter were a beautiful pair hanging out together on Thursday evening. They'll be close again on Friday and gradually move farther apart as the weekend rolls by. Jupiter rises and sets a little earlier than the moon, but both will be visible in twilight after sunset. And then there's Mars. Mars is the beautiful, bright, reddish-orange planet that rises about an hour later than the moon, but is high in the sky by 9 p.m. You can't miss these celestial giants right now. Take advantage of the clear skies and take a look up over the next few nights. The stars are shining on the stage this weekend, too, as Next Step Dance Studio presents The Polar Express, on the main stage at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium for two shows. Friday's show is at 7 p.m. and Saturday's show is at 6 p.m. The Kodiak Arts Council is celebrating the return of the First Friday Art Walk tonight, too. Head on over to the Kodiak Arts Council's Facebook event or their website to find more details and the schedule for the shuttle bus. There will be artists and displays at the high school, the frame shop, Harborside Flyby, Islander Bookshop, and Double Shovel Cidery. Have fun! And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.